What do you get when you have one voiceover girl?
And me? That makes two voiceover girls.
Oh, okay. What do you get when you have two voiceover girls separated by one pond and two perspectives?
Oh, I know. You get the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast.
That's right. Let's listen to Romy and Jessica as they share their journey into the voiceover industry. Sarah, how are you finding work?
Well, I think you have to be a good business person and think outside the box. You do have to have a good work ethic and work hard and think about what value you can bring to businesses that are out there. So, I mean, I'm at the start of a journey and no one's knocking at my door or ringing the mobile and leaving messages. So I think you have to have lots of strings to your bow, be able to juggle many hats. And, you know, you've got to learn different skills. I've learnt to build three different websites. I've learnt about branding and colours. So it's a slow process. So you can't expect anything to happen suddenly and immediately. You have to be in it for the long run, you know. But I wouldn't go and give up a job suddenly and say, I'm going to do this. You know, I think you need to start gradually. It takes time to get yourself set up. And there isn't any guarantee of work at the end of the day, but you do have to go out and find the work. And it's about connecting with people and also making your clients feel valued and special. And I think networking is the key. Telling businesses that what you can offer them will be very beneficial to their business. And that's very much part of what being a voice artist is all about.
And what's your experience of pay-to-play sites?
Yes, I've joined Mandy. There are many pay-to-play sites. There's Bidalgo, Voices123, Voices.com, and a few others. I like Mandy. They've got some nice auditions on there. But it can feel a little bit like a cattle market. There are many, many people auditioning on these pay-to-play sites, so I wouldn't spend a lot of time on them. I would spend most of your time networking and building up a list of clients that you can contact.
Direct marketing seems to be a big part of business in voiceover. I would agree with that.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that at first. You could also get an agent. If you want to, you could contact different agents and see if anyone would take you on. I had an agent when I was an actor. She did find really good jobs for me. I was very lucky. I had, you know, 11 years of solid work as soon as I left drama school. So agents are really helpful, and I think they do get better quality work than the normal pay-to-plays. But again, I haven't had that much experience of the pay-to-play sites.
Thank you, Sarah, for sharing your experience of finding work. As you said, you need to be proactive and you need to work hard. And for you, networking is the key way. So obviously join a P2P if you wish, but don't spend all your time on it. Just get out there and get networking. And also, if you can, find a great agent who could help you. Great. So we're now going to speak to Lorraine to find out what her work strategy has been. So, Lorraine, have you joined any pay-to-play sites?
No, I've heard. And, well, some of the things that they're doing is not really... I find that they're... To me, it's kind of like lying to the talent. I think that they're taking a disproportionate amount of money for themselves and not giving it to the talent. And yet the same job could be on a different site, the exact same job. And now you're actually seeing what you should be paid rather than what this P2P site is paying you. And again, I made the mistake of mistaking that with a different one. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I did when I realized it is I sent them an email to say, do not automatically charge my account at the end of this year. I am just going to run the year and that's it. And I also went into my PayPal account and took out the automatic renewal out of my PayPal account to make sure that once the year's up, I am done. I will not be pursuing anything else with this particular site. I just, in my gut and my, I just don't feel, I feel dirty using it. You know, I don't feel that they were honest and I don't think that they were fair. And to me, honesty and fairness is really, really important. So as far as I'm concerned, no, I won't be pursuing them. Are they all like that? Absolutely not. There are some very, very good P2P sites. Some of them are easy to get onto. You can get on the free one, but you're not really going to get a whole lot out of it. You do have to pay to get into more of the actual jobs. And some of them are particular about who they allow onto their site. So, you know, if you can get onto the ones that are particular about you getting onto their site, you're probably in a really good one.
That's true. If a pay-to-play has good quality, good standards, then it will make it more difficult to join.
But at least you know that it's going to be fair and they will give you fair market rates rather than, oh, well, you know, we've got a million voiceover actors on our site. Yeah, but you're not paying any of them the proper rate. You're keeping a lot of it for yourself and you're making them pay for the privilege to be on your site. Not only do you have to pay, but whenever you are bidding for a job, you have to take a certain percentage that is their cut. So, okay, now you're double and triple dipping because you're also taking money from the person who's paying or who's going to be hiring, and you're keeping a portion of that as well. So now you're triple dipping. It's like, now you just got greedy and you're not really helping the industry at all. Now I'll tell you what I really feel.
That's wonderful. Love it.
Well, that's what we really do need to hear, because that's what's really helpful for everyone, especially those who are new.
I think there are plenty of people that, you know, they see these fees that they have to pay and they're like, okay, that's just, you know, the cost of doing business. They see the fee that gets taken out on top of that payment. And some of them will say, that's just the cost of doing business. And they need to understand that maybe it's not. You know?
Well, the other thing too with this site is that any of your auditions, they can use those files anywhere they want.
Mm-hmm.
Because they consider that's part of the agreement that you say, okay, here's the agreement, unless you've read through it. And that's something that's happened more recently. It's like, no, wait a minute. No, I've auditioned for a very, very specific job. I don't want you to take my voice and my words and start to manipulate it and use it and sell it somewhere else where right. I'm not making any money off of it at all. To me, as far as I'm concerned, it's copyright infringement on my voice.
Right. Your voice is your property.
It is. So you're not paying me. Mm-mm.
Right. I know that's something I get worried about with pay to plays. And like, you know, when you'll see like a really long script or something like that, and I'm like, there is no way in hell I'm recording that whole thing. First of all,
absolutely not.
I'm going to watermark it because I just don't trust that, you know, somebody's not going to take it and cut it down and turn it into something else.
When I see a really long script, I do under 2 minutes.
Yes.
In fact, most of the time they'll know within the first 30 seconds, whether or not they want you anyways.
Absolutely.
So most of the time, anything that's longer than 45 seconds, I'll do 45 seconds and I probably won't do all of it, but I will put in the notes, like in the letter that I'm saying, well, I've done 45 seconds. I figure you'll have a good chance of listening to my voice. If you want to hear more, if you want to hear more, get in touch with me. But no, long scripts. It's just like for audiobooks. I won't do a long, like they'll have an entire chapter or they put the whole book up. That's when they don't know what they're doing, but they'll put an entire chapter. I'll do about 3 minutes tops.
Yep. Same here.
Because first of all,
is usually my range.
And then it takes 6 times longer. So you're spending 20 minutes on 3 minutes in case you get the job. It's like, you know what? We'll just make this about 3 minutes and that's about it. Because you'll know where I will adjust a bit is if it's fiction, because fiction will have voices, they'll have people and stuff. Then I'll try to pick a section where you're going to see more of the different voices and I'll narrate that part. And then submit that for the audition.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
When you're doing, now, if people are interested in audiobooks and if they go on ACX and all the rest of it, here's word of advice and warning. I've been approached over and over and over again to do books. I don't do books sight unseen because what I find is that some of them have been translated from something else. And I swear to God, I've gotten the Italian connection because I know from the names and the addresses of the emails, they're from Italy. So that's fine. No problem. Some of them are translated very well. And then I'll just adjust a couple of things here and there because it's not quite the correct English. And I'm okay with that. I'll tell them, can I do a little bit of editing? And they'll say, oh yeah, please. Then you get somewhere, all the words are English and it makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I've recently had one where this was the third of a set of three. And I returned it three times to the rights holder and said, I can't read this. It makes no sense. Send it back. And I said, whoever's doing the translation, fire their ass, fire them, get your money back.
To add on to that word of caution, there are many times when those books that make no sense because they seem like they've been translated from another language, they're not translated. They're run through a program that's called a synonymizer, and they have taken a stolen script and they have run it through a synonymizer to change the words so that they're not technically plagiarizing. They've put a fake name on it.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, I did my fair share of those before I figured out what was going on. And that's what got me actually towards Gravy for the Brain and some other things, like was like looking for accents. That was one thing. But then I was looking, I'm like, why do I keep getting these poorly translated books? You know? And so I started looking into it, and then I discovered that there was this thing that was going on. And I was like, dang, okay. Yeah. Yeah. You gotta be careful.
I don't take books sight unseen anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like set. And what I do is I tell them I don't take on contracts sight unseen. And secondly, send me chapter two in Word format, because the introduction may be great, but you find all the problems in chapter two. Mm-hmm. Then I start to see what chapter two is like. And if it reads properly, then I'll accept the contract. But if it's a garble of God only knows what, it's like, no, I'm sorry. And I'll tell them, I'm sorry, but this is not in any way understandable. The English is not proper. The syntax and, you know, it's all off. I tell them politely, but I decline. And I've declined projects and I've explained why. And I've had some who have thanked me because they didn't know. I've had some who said, oh, we'd really like your voice, but let me see if we can rework it. And they have, and they've returned it. And it was something that I could work with. But don't take projects sight unseen, not on audiobooks. Mm-mm. If someone comes up and if they really want it fast, run away. Oh, I need this right. No, even if I don't have anything, my answer is no. And generally, I'm always got a book on the book go anyway. So I'll be like, well, my first available date is going to be in 6 weeks from now. And they go away.
Right.
If they lowball you, mm-mm. I've had someone, oh, well, I'm going to give you $25 per finished hour. I was like, I'm sorry, but my rate is higher than that. And at the time it was 50. And then I got the whole sob story. Oh, I don't have much money. And can you please do it? And here I am sitting with casts on my leg, or I can't, you know, I'm in a wheelchair in my house. I'm going, oh, honey, you have no idea who you're talking to here.
Right.
And so I said, look, I'm in a wheelchair. This is my livelihood. And at $25 an hour, when it takes 6 hours for one, I'd be working for $3 an hour. I can't even live on that. So no, go away.
Right. You just have to be able to like know your worth and stick to it, you know,
and stick to it is the important one. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll have people, but I had someone who lowballed me once and I said, you know what? My rate is 65 per finished hour. And she came back. She said, okay.
Yeah.
So you never know, but stick to your guns. If your rate is $150 and someone comes by and says, oh, I love your voice. I really wish I'll pay you seven. No. Mm-hmm. My rate is $150. If you like my voice, scrape up the money and pay me. Otherwise, you know what? And I refused a lot of them that way. I'm sure there are any number of very, very talented narrators who would love to work with you. Bye-bye.
When I get somebody like that, I give them the whole spiel about the fact that in the UK, there is a minimum wage. So to work below that is illegal. And that's how I just get rid of them.
I had somebody, an author, actually contact me. So one of the things that I do to like supplement income because this isn't able to be full-time, is I do substitute teaching in the schools. And so one of the teachers that I subbed for realized that I was a narrator, and she had an author friend that wanted to have a book done. And so she gave her my number and she called me and was asking me about my rate. And I asked her how long her book was to give her an idea of how much that would be and everything. And when I told her, you know, that if, you know, like 250 per finished hour, and that has narration, editing, mastering, blah, blah, blah. She was just completely shocked. She says, well, my book is like, you know, an 11-hour book or something. I can't afford that. Maybe I'll just have to record it myself. So I was like, and that's fine if you want to do that. But let me tell you a couple things that you probably don't realize, which is you need to have a sound treated space, a decent mic, an interface, a program, a da-da-da-da-da, and you need to prepare to spend at the very least 3 hours per every finished hour, probably going to be more like 4, 5, 6, because you don't do this all the time. So when you're thinking about doing your audiobook, which that's perfect if you want to do it, lots of authors do, just realize that you are going to have some cost to even do that.
Yep.
And she was just like, okay, maybe I'll save some money and I'll call you back, you know? And it was, there are plenty of authors and rights holders that just really don't have an idea about what it's ignorance, but not like in a rude way. They just don't know. And no, you think that your time educating them.
They think that a 3 hour book will take 3 hours. And that if they give you like $25 an hour, that's like great money.
Yeah, no. Except for it's per finished hour, you know, it's not like you're getting working hours. Now, if it was 25 per working hour, you might consider it, but like, not for per finished hour. If you're having to like read the book, prep the book, read the book, edit the audio. I mean, there is just way too much to be okay with that.
I said, well, sure, I could do that, but it won't be edited. And she went, what's editing? And it's like, okay, we're done here. Should your listeners, read or viewers, whoever, if they're interested in seeing someone who's only been at it for a year and they want to see a website, lorrainecroston.com, go and have a look. I'm willing to if they got comments on how to make it better, thank you very much. If they're only going to trash it, I don't want to hear from you.
Brilliant.
But if there's advice to make it better, I welcome the advice. Get yourself out there, and you're your own worst enemy on any of this stuff. You're your own worst critic for how you look, and you're your own worst critic for how you sound. Talk to yourself as you would your best friend.
And then take your own advice.
And take your own advice. And get out there. The best that could happen, they love your voice. They love your look. They hire you.
Well, thank you, Lorraine. It's been brilliant talking to you. Thank you for sharing your experience of the pay-to-play site that you had. Sadly, it wasn't a good one, but certainly a warning for everyone. And also, thank you for your insights about doing audiobooks. And again, the scams are around and the difficulties, so you have to take caution even with that. Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing everything. And now we're going to go over to Martin to find out about his experiences of looking for voiceover work.
So what is your process for finding work?
So initially I had signed up for a pay-to-play site, and I spent about a year on it and wasn't getting a lot of good results really from it. Mm-hmm. So, but at that point I was still in training. So I thought, well, that's, you know, I'd gotten a few likes here and there, but I also wasn't getting a lot of audition opportunities. So I found that kind of frustrating. Or when I got the audition opportunity, it said they're looking for 50 auditions and already 45 people have auditioned. And so I would see that, and I would, you know, I mean, literally I would open the email that said, you know, here's an audition opportunity. And it was already like, they already have 45. So how is this working? And so as I dug into that more, I realized, well, I paid, I think it was $300 for the year, but that was considered the low tier of what people were paying. And people were paying upwards, I think, of $3,000 or $4,000 to have the opportunity to audition. And so it's the people in those higher tier that were the ones getting the money or getting the auditions before me. So I'm kind of like at the end here, despite the fact that I paid for a membership, but I didn't pay enough to, you know, be number one into the queue there. So, so that was somewhat eye-opening for me and a little frustrating, but I've gone to a different pay-to-play site now and with really a different mentality. They have a really a different business model where everybody basically has an equal chance. There aren't people in the high tier or the medium tier or low tier. And so basically when the audition hits, everybody has an equal chance at that point. And so I find that a much better, works better for me. I mean, I think, you know, from that first pay to play, I think other people have done okay with it. And, you know, it just depends on, I think, your budget perhaps is one of them. And how willing are you to really just be sitting at your computer and constantly checking. And the minute something comes in, boom, you know, you're going to audition for it and get it out the door. The sooner the better.
Yeah. I actually had that experience yesterday where I was like sitting here and I was like, okay, you know, I have other things I need to do, but I see all these auditions coming in and I'm actually seeing them as they're coming in instead of having to look at them later because I'm in the middle of something else. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to bang out a few of these auditions. And then my reminder came up that I had an appointment that I had to go to. And I was like, well, guess not, you know. So and then, of course, by the time I got home, they were gone because they'd already filled what they needed and they'd put them, taken them down, you know. Yeah, it happens really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, there's a time element on it. And, you know, that's perhaps other advice for people that are new, you know, or getting started is to realize that you need to be available. If, you know, it's going to be difficult to try to do this if you want to do pay to play sites, at least as like, you know, well, I can only get on my computer, you know, 2 hours a night or something like that. It's going to be hard to do that. Now, it's not impossible because perhaps you're going to go a different route and say, you know, with work with an agent or agents, and then you might have a little bit more time because they'll say, okay, you've got until, you know, tomorrow night to submit this or something like that. And there isn't necessarily a queue, you know, or a list like that in the same sense.
So you've had experience of a few pay to plays. Have you explored any other routes to finding work?
Well, I am working with actually three agencies right now, so I'm getting auditions from them as well. So I guess that's the other advice for people getting started is don't put all your eggs in one basket, as they say, right? And so don't make the pay to play be your only source of auditions or your only source of business, because really what happens if that pay to play goes away? Your entire business falls apart. Or let's say, and this has happened before, is the pay to play changes their scheme and suddenly, you know, you used to be number one on the list of getting it, but they've changed how they're doing things. Now you're number 35 and suddenly your business becomes, you know, a whole different situation. So, and I think, you know, not just pay to play, but consider the agent going with agencies or, you know, maybe more importantly, marketing yourself is getting out there. LinkedIn is a great resource for people, you know, to build out your LinkedIn profile. You know, but I think whatever you do, make sure that you're ready and, you know, your door is open for business. Like don't open your door for business unless you've got the coaching, you've got the demos, you've got the website, the branding. Make sure it's all there because you want to have it all available. You may run into a situation where some casting director, you know, is interested in you, but then they go and try to find out and, you don't have a website yet, or you don't have, you know, a demo for that yet, or whatever it is. And sometimes those chances, they don't come around again, right? I mean, or from the same person, you know? So I would say, you know, that would be my advice for people getting started. Just have everything all in place.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
How long did it take you to get everything into place in order to look for work?
I would say, for me, it was about 2 years, I'd say, from if I kind of look at the, you know, beginning part all the way to the point where my website was built up and ready to go. And I'm still, you know, tweaking and adjusting, and it's a, you know, constant thing, learning about new tools and things like, you know, there's on the business side, there's like customer relationship management. There's mm-hmm. tools for that to try to keep track of who have you reached out to and, you know, phone numbers and follow-ups and things like that. And so there's, yeah, but it's been about 2 years or so.
Right. So it's obviously not a quick thing that you can do, set up a voiceover business. It takes its time and you've got to plan everything.
It is. I mean, and could it be done sooner? You know, maybe. I mean, you know, there's people out there that maybe they have certain skills and then they could, you know, or maybe they've run their own business before and they can, you know, adapt things or whatever. And so I think the road is different for everyone, you know, like it seems like in talking to people, some people, you know, they've come like right out of college and this is mm-hmm. what they want to do and they've always wanted to do it and that's great. And there's other people that, you know, it's been a career change type thing for them where they're, you know, such, like myself, or it's like, okay, I'm interested in doing this and I want to go do this. And that's what they pursue. And so that's what's kind of great. And there's such a mix of people with different backgrounds. It's always mm-hmm. really, really interesting.
That was one of the reasons I think we decided to go ahead and do episodes in between our episodes about different topics, was so that people could hear the different ways that people came to voiceover and the different experiences that they had along the way, because there is just, you're right, there's a lot of variety in like people's backgrounds and why they came to it and when they came to it, that it's just, it's crazy. Like there's not that standardized, okay, I'm going to, you know, go to college. And then when I'm done with my 4-year degree, I'm going to go on to my, you know, like there's not that process where everybody has a very similar path, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's the other thing. It's like, you know, people, I've heard people say, oh, well, so what school should I go to for voiceover? And it's like, well, you know, I don't know that there's one particular school, you know, and definitely it would help if you have some acting background, but, you know, you could do very well without, you know, having that acting background or, you know, having gone through any formalized type of a process, you could do well. And, you know, it's the age range is there in this as well, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, and even the variety, I mean, there's, you know, there's middle-aged women voicing, you know, little children for shows, right? So how cool is that? Like what, you know, the opportunities, like you don't necessarily need to, you know, peg yourself into one thing, but maybe you have some other opportunities there. You know, if your voice is naturally high or squeaky or like, you know, it's that part to me has been really interesting is, you know, to see people and you're like, wow, well, your voice would be great for that, or you could really excel doing that.
Great. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
But I would say, you know, to your listeners is hang in there, you know, and definitely you'll have days that are better than some and worse than some. And, you know, I think persistence and have a thick skin because, you know, a lot of this job is auditioning for things. And you'll get a lot of no's. You'll get a lot more no's than you will get yes. So be willing to accept that and say, well, your voice maybe just isn't right for them. And yep. You can never control that, really. You know, if they have something in mind and they may say, I mean, you may think you're perfect for that role, but then, you know, your voice reminds the casting director of her ex-husband or something like that. And, you know, it's just not going to work. So yeah. Then be ready to move on and, you know, keep improving yourself and, you know, doing better and brand yourself. And a solid brand is a really important thing, I think, to have, so that when people see that, they're like, this is who he is. This is who she is. This is their authentic self. And then they can look at that and listen to you and make the connection.
Did you do your own branding, or did you get somebody else to help you with that?
So I did the branding myself, but I've also read an excellent book by Celia Siegel. She's a branding expert specifically for voiceover actors, and it's called The Voiceover Achiever, I believe.
Yeah, Voiceover Achiever. I've started it. I haven't read it all yet.
And so she's, you know, and she has actually right now, she's doing like weekly, just general little 30-minute Zoom rooms with anyone that's interested in branding for voiceovers. And, you know, I'd highly recommend people give some serious thought to the branding part, because I think a lot of people almost put it in the background and are like, oh, branding, yeah, okay, I'll do that later or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's a main thing that you need to brand yourself right. I mean, you don't want somebody showing up to your website and maybe it's this beautiful, you know, colorful whatever thing, and you talk like this, and you know, I got this really low voice, and I can do this and that and the other thing, and you're like, wait a minute, this doesn't, you know, something isn't connecting here. I've got, you know, this should be a happy, excited, you know, friendly type of a thing based on the website. So
yeah. So you don't want, like, say, your website to go along with somebody who sounds like they've had 3 packs of cigarettes and a lot of whiskey, huh?
Right. You know, you need to buy this grill now. You know, you don't want to do that and have, you know, all this pretty, you know, whatever colorful thing there. So
good stuff. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a great, great opportunity. And I wish both of you and the podcast the best.
Thank you, Martin. Appreciate that. I think there were some great things that you said in terms of the pay-to-play sites and the fact that some of them have different tiers and you have to pay for the higher tiers in order to get more auditions or to get them more quickly, which is questionable, obviously. And, you know, the need to be quick at auditioning because it's so competitive. Just wait a couple of hours sometimes and you miss the auditions because so many other people have just got in there quickly. I think the fact that you said that don't put all your eggs in one basket is something that we've obviously been saying all along, to, you know, have different ways of finding work. And that's really essential. And I think something that you've emphasized is be ready before you actually start looking for work. And I think that's really important. Make sure you have a good foundation. Make sure you've got your website in place, so you have your presence on the net. Everything is set up and you've got your demos to send out should there be interest. So I think that's a really good point. And it does take its time. That's the other thing. Don't expect everything to happen overnight. It will take a while unless you're already a business. You have experience. You know how to do things quickly. So that's great. Thank you, Martin. Really appreciate your input today. And so we're going to now speak to Suzanne for her experiences of looking for voiceover work. So welcome back, Suzanne. I'd like to know whether you joined any pay-to-play sites in order to look for work.
Okay, so I'm currently technically with 3 P2Ps. Maybe I won't mention them. Okay. there's one I have received 0 auditions from. It's not very well known. So I've only joined them about a month ago, 2 months ago. I've received 0 auditions. I won't mention them. I'm with another one where I have received a few auditions, like on a regular basis, but I haven't booked any work. And I'm also with voices.com, like everyone else. But I have not been successful in booking through them. I don't know why. I'm shortlisted a lot. But for whatever reason, I'm not able to book. I don't know why that is. I would like to, my voices.com is about to expire any day now. My next one, I would like to join Voice123 because I've never joined them before. We'll see what happens. Maybe nothing.
Worth it.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Everybody has a different experience on that. I mean, I hear of people having like huge success, and then I hear people, you know, well, I'm on Voice 123 and I'm like, I get auditions, but not very many, and I definitely don't book them.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, like, I think some people, like I said, some people are naturally talented and good on them, and they go on these sites and they book, and they, good for them. I don't know, like, for whatever reason, I get a lot of practice auditioning, which is great. And I do my best and I submit the best auditions I possibly can. And I read a lot of scripts, but thus far, I haven't had success on them. I've had more success through an agent and through finding work on my own. So yeah, I don't know. P2Ps, I'm sure they're great for some people and some people are killing it. And that's great. Maybe one day I'll magically decode the algorithm or something. I don't know. But yeah, for whatever reason, it hasn't worked for me. But I'll keep trying. I don't know.
Right. It seems like it needs to be one piece of your plan, not
yeah.
Your whole.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely not. That was another thing. When I first started out, I thought that I would go on voices.com and I would book with my homemade demo and I would be like an easy peasy, but that hasn't been my experience. So.
And what's your experience of having an agent?
Yeah. So I just got my first agent in December. And so that's a new experience for me. So I'm getting lots of auditions, which is great. I've booked one, so that's been exciting. So that's a whole new experience for me. And I find that the auditions that I do get, the pay that's offered is so much higher than what you see on a pay-to-play site. I'm non-union, of course. And two of my agents are in the States, and I'm in Canada. Two of my agents are in the States, so obviously I'm non-union, but still, like, the pay that is offered from agents is so much higher than what you'd see on a pay-to-play site.
Yeah. It really is when you see the figures and you're like, when you'll see a commercial on a pay to pay, you know, one of those things.
Yeah.
You'll see the commercial on that and it'll be like, I think I saw one the other day that said like $650 for a worldwide distribution of a commercial in perpetuity.
Of course.
But then they put this little caveat that said, this doesn't include radio. If the customer decides to go for radio, we'll negotiate a radio usage. And I was like, oh yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, when you see them come through agents for like these, you know, national commercials and stuff like that, it's what some people make in a year.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. It's great. Crazy. And like, one of the odd ones I got from an agent a few months ago or back in January was it ended up being a Super Bowl commercial, and I'm like, I didn't know that at the time, but I'm like, hey, I at least got to audition for a Super Bowl commercial. I didn't get it, but at least, hey, I got the chance, you know. So for me, that was exciting, because if I had, you know, that would have been like amazing. But at least I'm getting these higher caliber jobs offered.
Yeah, that's funny that you had that experience. I did too. As I was watching the Super Bowl, I had received an audition for a national spot. And I was like, and it was open to male or female voiceover. So I did the audition. I was like, oh, that's great. And then I saw the commercial on, I recognized the script, right? Cause it was a lot of pictures with the background voice. And I was like, oh, they chose a guy. Cool. All right. You know, but it was like, you can kind of have like this feather in your cap where you're just like, I auditioned for that.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that in itself is an achievement, isn't it?
I'm playing with the big dogs now, you know.
Absolutely. That's right. Oh, I know. Isn't it funny when you're in some of the mentoring groups or whatever, and we're taking these mentoring groups from working professionals, and then somebody will say, oh, I saw this on a pay-to-play or whatever, and they'll be like, yeah, I auditioned for that, and you're like, wow, so I was up against you, you know. Yes. Like, that feels kind of like starstruck and celebrity a little bit too.
Huh? Yes. Yes, a little bit, for sure.
And are you pursuing any other routes to finding voiceover work apart from the pay-to-plays and agents?
Well, there's directly reaching out, which I'm still not the 100% amazing at, but I'm working on it. There's reaching out directly. There's also, like, I'm trying to expand my social media a bit so that I'm posting more regularly, because there is something to be said for being found. You know, there are people who are looking for voice talent, and they will do a simple Google search. And if you're, you know, if you come up with an Instagram account that has a lot of followers, I don't know if this actually works, but I'm trying to I'm trying to post more regularly on my social media. I'm, you know, hoping referrals would be great if someone knows me and says, oh, I, you know, I can't do this job, but Suzanne can. That would be great too. But yeah, for right now, I'm trying to reach out. I'm trying to do the personal touch at this point.
Are you running that through a CRM or do you have a specific?
So I just use an Excel spreadsheet.
That's a CRM. Yep.
It is. I mean, I do have one through Gravy for the Brain, and I have used it. I've updated some of it there, but I love my Excel spreadsheets. I think they're great.
I know. I'm a big fan of Excel spreadsheets myself. Yeah. And trying to do a database seems to be clunky for me. I don't know why. I don't know why. I need to get used to that. But
yeah.
I think Suzanne is a published author. Are you not?
One thing I started doing is I started every day writing down what I did. So I would write down, you know, what I did for voice warm-ups, what I did for auditions, what I did for the research that day. I started writing it down in a day planner because as a musician, there's this concept of, it's called a practice diary. So every day, you know, you do your scales, you do your studies, your etudes, your pieces, you do your exercises, and you write them all down. You say, I spent, you know, 20 minutes doing scales, 40 minutes working on my pieces, you know, another 20 minutes doing other, you know, etudes or whatever. So there's this idea that you sort of track what you're doing. So I started doing that in a day planner. I would just, you know, open it to that day and write, okay, I did 5 auditions and I spent 20 minutes doing vocal warm-ups and I did this and I did that. So I was like, well, why don't I just like make a spread, like a template. So I put together a template, like a full page template, which I know a full blank page can be intimidating. So I put together this full blank page and then I put it all together into a book and I self-published it on Amazon. And self-publishing on Amazon is super easy. And it costs nothing. Wow, like you can publish anything as long as you own the rights to it. I'm sure they have certain standards, but as long as you own the rights to it, you can literally publish anything on Amazon. And I'm in the process. I want to redo it. I want to, the one I made, I think it's too big and cumbersome. I want to cut it down and make it a bit more focused, a bit smaller. So I'm going to revise it, but yeah, you can, I just published this on Amazon. It was super easy. And it's a fun thing to do. It's a self-promotion thing. It's like a thing where I can say, hey, like I put my name on this and this is something, another way, another avenue.
Dude, when you get merch on your website, you know, unless you have exclusivity with Amazon, you could be like, here, go to my store and you could buy my cup and my t-shirt and my practice diary.
I could sell it from my website. I could definitely do that. And that's something I could, you know, I'd like in the future, I'd like to have a store on my website where, you know, I'm selling, you know, either like this practice diary or even a vocal course, a course on improving your voice. That could be something I could do because, like, you know, there are things from singing that I've learned that you can use also in voiceover. You only have one voice, you know, you have one set of vocal folds, and you know, it applies. Some of the things I learned in singing apply to voiceover.
That's cool. So that's a question I've had too, because I've thought about in the future about expanding, right? And like going, like a lot of voiceover do that they do their voiceover work, they do mentoring and coaching and groups, and you know, they have multiple spokes in their wheel of business. And I thought about coaching as one of them because I like teaching people, I like learning, that sort of thing. But I'm like, when do you know that you are good enough, or when do you know that it's appropriate for you to start teaching? You know, I was actually on the social yesterday for Gravy for the Brain. And there is somebody that's, that is teaching courses in marketing.
Yeah.
At a lower cost because they're teaching some of the very basic things. But they're not too far from a newbie status themselves, but yet they felt confident enough to do that at a lower rate.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't want to be considered a hack, you know? So like, when
right.
do you, and is there something that kind of gave you, the idea that like, hey, okay, I could do this? Is it from your previous training, or is there something more to it where you're...
I mean, for me, okay, I don't want to coach voiceover. I think even if I was like, or maybe, okay, maybe that would change. Even if I was like the top VO in the world, I don't know if I'd want to teach, because I feel like teaching is a vocation. You have to have a certain amount of, I don't know. There's just something that people who are good at coaching or teaching have. I don't know if I have it. Maybe that will change. I don't know. For me, I think like I want to stick to what I know I'm good at. Like I know I have a degree in voice. So I know about singing, and I know some singing techniques, and I know about healthy vocal production. So that's one thing I know about. Do I want to take on my own students and coach them? Probably not. But the idea for me of doing a course where I could give people exercise, like a 10-week course where I could give people, you know, exercises to do each day, to me, that appeals to me, because you do it one time and then...
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And you can sort of, you can have it on your website and people can download it and refer to it in the future. So for me, it's not really necessarily that I want to have students to coach.
Okay, I see.
You know, to me, it'd be more like, I want to offer a product that might be helpful to someone, and it would be there, and it would be, anyone could download it and I could update it as needed, and it would be there. And yeah, I think that there's some people, you have to have a certain amount of confidence. And I think people who teach have a certain personality that makes them able to do that. And I think, Jessica, you could definitely teach something, you know, enough that you could definitely teach, because I know you have a marketing background. So you could definitely teach something related to that, I think.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I'm like terrified of marketing myself. It's stupid. It's so stupid.
It's not stupid at all. It's totally natural. Like me, I'm not used to, you know, and like, I'm terrible at that. And especially job interviews, like I have to practice in advance. I have to say, okay, what am I good at? And I have to like mentally prepare myself in advance to say, okay, I'm good at this. I'm good at this. I'm good at this. And I've accomplished all these things, you know, and, you know, I have to mentally practice it, and it's confidence, right? And so I think it's totally human and totally normal to not have that natural confidence. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, I'm working on, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to build every day. You know, I'm smart. I've done a lot of training. I am, you know, I've accomplished a lot in my life, and, you know, I deserve to have success. So
absolutely.
And you do. That's too nice. Jessica, and you do, Romy.
Thank you.
Yesterday, I was talking about, or maybe a couple of days ago, I was talking about like, oh, I have this. Oh, I got Mark Scott's program, for marketing. Yes, and yes. There was a marketing Q&A session, and I was supposed to be in it. And then something happened. I was working on something, and I completely like went by my alarm and everything I had set to make sure I was there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn it, I was supposed to be in this course. And my son's like, Mom, did you not study business? Was marketing like not your focus? And I was like, it was, but it's different.
Well, it's different now because you have to market to yourself.
It is. It's different. Like, yes, I did study business and marketing, but like, it was more of that whole, like, you're an ad agency who's making ads for a right. corporation that provides a product or a service. It's not, it's very different to,
yes.
to be your product.
Exactly.
Well, time's flown by, and come to the end of this chat with Suzanne. Thank you so much for sharing about your experiences with the pay to plays, showing us the reality that it's actually not that easy to get work through pay to plays. It's very, very competitive, and it's really important to be aware of that when you're signing up. However, you've also said that you've had some luck with agents and you get higher paid jobs, so that's important to know. Obviously, you've been doing your own direct marketing too, and you've got lots of skills with regards to your music background, and you've written a book as well, which is fabulous. So all the best for that. Thank you, Suzanne. And we're now going to go over and speak to Simon to find out about his endeavours to get work. Hi, Simon. So we'd love to know about your endeavours for finding voiceover work. Could you please share your experiences with us?
Right. So in some respects, I've kind of touched on it obliquely as we've been chatting. You know, part of my expectation was that with today's modern technology, by, you know, having an agent and having access to some of these, you know, job finding platforms, the P2P sites, as we call them, that work would come in. And absolutely. But of course, what with one thing and another, including world events, there's an awful lot of people looking for jobs not so many jobs. And by the way, and I'm on many, but not all of these P2P sites. And it's definitely tough out there. And certainly my experience is I'm seeing far fewer opportunities this side of the new year than I was seeing beforehand. Now, whether that's linked to lockdown or whatever, I don't know. But there's just fewer opportunities. But I thought that that was going to be the bread and butter. So actually, it was one of the biggest things I learned, which was that something you always knew, I guess, which is if you want to get something done, you're going to do it yourself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I'm now all about outreach. And so part of my roadmap, part of my discipline is reaching out to people, a targeted group of people on a constant and ongoing basis. And it's working. Early days, because I only started, probably decided on the third week of January, thought, let the new year get out of the way, and all the rest of it. And that's what I'm doing. It's a process. You have to build and build and build. It's relationship building, but it is working.
Are you running that through a CRM program then?
I am, but I built it myself.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah. So it's not perfect. It's a bit clunky, but it does what I need it to do in the way I need it to do it. Mm-hmm. I actually moved across over the new year to an all singing and all dancing CRM platform, which I thought was going to be brilliant, and it is brilliant, but it's more than I need. And mm-hmm. I felt I was spending too much time feeding that particular machine for what it needed rather than just sending out the messages and keeping track in the way I do.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's perfect for a larger organization, multiple teams. I mean, it's actually a really cool piece of software, but it's just more than I need.
Well, it's good that you're trying out different routes to getting work. Is there any one particular way that you've found more useful and you feel more comfortable with?
I would say it's early days, but one of the things that I invested in was a coach for this. And although I'm no stranger to this type of activity, and actually a big part of my previous background was in, you know, branding, marketing, et cetera, et cetera. I just kind of felt that, frankly, somebody who could give me a kick up the backside would be a good investment. Yes, exactly. For that sort of thing. So that's what I have invested in. I was having a chat with him yesterday, and he was touch wood. He said I was doing a great job. And I think I am. You know, have I bought the new Bentley? No. But... you know, for where I am in the process, I think it's a good, strong build from a good, steady foundation and a good platform. So we'll see.
Yes, I think we've all been forced to look at different ways of finding work because of the competitiveness and market saturation at the moment.
Yes, and I think, you know, one thing that really has happened in the last 12 months is maybe not saturation, but a huge number of people, particularly from stage and screen, who, you know, got many, many skills, but had no access to work during lockdown, mm-hmm. or far, far less access to work, quite rightly thought, well, let's have a look at voice. And of course, in many cases, tremendous skills and resources, and have got a lot to offer. But it just means that those opportunities are now fewer and far further between for that wider group now who are hunting, right. Hunting in the same forest.
Do you think the situation will go back to how it was when the theatres open up again and maybe the actors decide to go back to their original work?
I don't have an answer other than to say I think so many things have shifted now that it's very difficult to predict quite what the longer term shape. I mean, obviously, it would be great when theatres open up, you know, from an audience member's perspective, as well as, of course, for, you know, huge, huge numbers of talented people who need to get back on the stage, but also on the screen too. You know, so many productions have been shut down, and that will all ramp up. And I would hope that people, frankly, will follow the money and should also follow their talent. But I actually put it in that order deliberately because I think that's human nature. So we'll see. I think the new world hasn't quite been invented yet.
No, no.
That's still being figured out, I guess.
Still in the beta testing.
Exactly. So if any of us were waiting for a sign, I think the last 12 months or so have been that sign, right?
Yeah, it's been a learning experience, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
I think.
So Simon, do you have any final words of advice for newcomers to the industry?
I haven't got much that's wise to say about anything.
Okay, humble.
I, um, I think. Look, if somebody wants to get into any industry, they should give it a go. That doesn't mean it's easy. It doesn't mean that they should expect success unless they are prepared to put in the effort and have some skill. And of course, a lot of skill comes from technique, which comes from training, etc. So shouldn't consider it an easy ride. But there are some people out there with some amazing voices that other people should be listening to. You know, some of the marketing team calls, because Remy, I think we're all on some of them, aren't we? Some of the marketing team calls that I listen to, I hear some of the voices and I think, wow, that is a good voice. Way better than mine. So I think if you think you've got a great voice, go for it and see where it takes you. But be prepared to do what it takes. And that includes the training and the expertise and the everything else.
It's interesting. The first webinar I ever watched about voiceover, the presenter said voiceover is 5% voice and 95% technique. So yes, having a good voice is a good starting point, but there's a lot of hard work to put in to actually making it a success.
Yes, because, you know, the voice isn't the message. You know, it works because the words on the page are brought to life.
Mm-hmm.
And the words are brought to life by the skill of the person, not just who wrote it, because obviously that's hugely important, but the person who can interpret the information in a way that resonates inside, that is communicated across the void using voice. And so, yes, you might have a lovely sounding voice, whatever that is, but it's actually how you can lift it off the page. And that's the skill, that's the technique and all the rest of it.
No, I think this was wonderful. Thank you so much for taking.
You're very welcome. I always enjoy chatting and I always enjoy talking to VOs.
Thank you, Simon. That's great. Really appreciate you sharing your experiences. And again, you know, reiterating the competition that exists for work on pay-to-play sites and the need to look at other routes. And you've obviously talked about direct contacting clients and developing relationships, which is absolutely crucial. So we've come to the end of this episode. I think it's been a really great episode with lots of insights that people have shared with us. So over to you, Jessica, to finish.
Thanks, Rami. And thanks to our special guests for taking time to speak with us about their insights and experiences finding work in voiceover and pay-to-plays. Join us again next week when we visit with more of our voiceover friends about this topic. And if you like what you hear, make sure that you like and subscribe to this podcast. And don't forget to tell your friends. Also, we're totally cool with you telling complete strangers. The more the merrier. And did you know we also have a Facebook group? If you want to connect with us there, it's facebook.com/groups/voiceovergirlsacrossthepond. Until next time, take care.
Bye. Thanks for joining us for the Voiceover Girls Across the Pond podcast. This is where we would normally shout out to our sponsors.
Jessica, we don't have any sponsors yet.
I know. But if we did, this would be the shout out. Hint, hint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast.
And tell all your friends, your family, your neighbors, and everyone else.